Chapter 19. With your own children, when you come to Nuchidal, I must add a word as to my husband's wishes in this matter. He is resolved to spare the child whom we make our own any future mortification and loss of self-respect which might be caused by a discovery of his true origin. He will bear my husband's name, and he will be brought up in the belief that he is really our son. His inheritance of what we have to leave will be secured to him, not only according to the laws of England in such cases, but according to the laws of Switzerland also, for we have lived so long in this country that there is a doubt whether we may not be considered as domiciled in Switzerland. The one precaution left to take is to prevent any after discovery at the foundling. Now, our name is a very uncommon one, and if we appear on the register of the institution as the persons adopting the child, there is just a chance that something might result from it. Your name, my dear, is the name of thousands of other people, and if you will consent to appear on the register, there need be no fear of any discoveries in that quarter. We are moving, by the doctor's orders, to a part of Switzerland in which our circumstances are quite unknown, and you, as I understand, are about to engage a new nurse for the journey when you come to see us. Under these circumstances, the child may appear as my child, brought back to me under my sister's care. The only servant we take with us from our old home is my own maid, who can be safely trusted. As for the lawyers in England and in Switzerland, it is their profession to keep secrets, and we may feel quite easy in that direction. So there you have our harmless little conspiracy. Write by return of post, my love, and tell me you will join it. Asterisk, 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 do you still conceal the name of the writer of that letter? Asked Vendale. I keep the name of the writer till the last, answered Abenreezer, and I proceed to my second proof, a mere slip of paper this time, as you see. Memorandum given to the Swiss lawyer, who drew the documents referred to in the letter I have just read, expressed as follows. Adopted from the Foundling Hospital of England, 3D March, 1836, a male infant, called, in the institution, Walter Wilding. Person appearing on the register as adopting the child, Mrs. Jane Ann Miller, widow, acting in this matter for her married sister, domiciled in Switzerland. Apostrophe patience. Resumed Abenreezer, as Vendale, breaking loose from Bintry, started to his feet. I shall not keep the name concealed much longer. Two more little slips of paper, and I have done. Third proof. Certificate of Dr. Gans, still living in practice at Nuchidal, dated July, 1838. The doctor certifies, you shall read it for yourselves directly, first, that he attended the adopted child in its infant maladies. Second, that, 3 months before the date of the certificate, the gentleman adopting the child as his son died. Third, that on the date of the certificate, his widow and her maid, taking the adopted child with them, left Nuchidal on their return to England. One more link now added to this, and my chain of evidence is complete. The maid remained with her mistress till her mistress's death, only a few years since. The maid can swear to the identity of the adopted infant, from his childhood to his youth, from his youth to his manhood, as he is now. There is her address in England, and there, Mr. Vendale, is the fourth and final proof. Why do you address yourself to me? Said Vendale, as Abenreezer threw the written address on the table. Abenreezer turned on him, in a sudden frenzy of triumph. Because you are the man. If my niece marries you, she marries a bastard, brought up by public charity. If my niece marries you, she marries an impostor, without name or lineage, disguised in the character of a gentleman of rank and family. Bravo! Cried Bintry. Admirably put, Mr. Abenreezer. It only wants one word more to complete it. She marries, thanks entirely to your exertions, a man who inherits a handsome fortune, and a man whose origin will make him prouder than ever of his peasant wife. George Vendale, as brother executors, let us congratulate each other. Our dear dead friend's last wish on Earth is accomplished. We have found the lost Walter Wilding. As Mr. Obenreizer said just now, you are the man. The words passed by Vendale unheeded. For the moment he was conscious of but one sensation. He heard but one voice. Marguerite's hand was clasping his. Marguerite's voice was whispering to him. I never loved you, George, as I love you now. The curtain falls, May Day. There is merrymaking in Cripple Corner, the chimneys smoke, the patriarchal dining hall is hung with garlands, and Mrs. Goldstraw, the respected housekeeper, is very busy. For, on this bright morning, the young master of Cripple Corner is married to its young mistress, far away. To wit, in the little town of Brieg, in Switzerland, lying at the foot of the Simplon Pass, where she saved his life. The bells ring gaily in the little town of Brieg, and flags are stretched across the street, and rifle shots are heard, and sounding music from brass instruments. Streamer-decorated casks of wine have been rolled out under a gay awning in the public way before the inn, and there will be free feasting and revelry. What with bells and banners, draperies hanging from windows, explosion of gunpowder, and reverberation of brass music, the little town of Brieg is all in a flutter, like the hearts of its simple people. It was a stormy night last night, and the mountains are covered with snow. But the sun is bright today, the sweet air is fresh, the tin spires of the little town of Brieg are burnished silver, and the Alps are ranges of far-off white cloud in a deep blue sky. The primitive people of the little town of Brieg have built a greenwood arch across the street, under which the newly married pair shall pass in triumph from the church. It is inscribed, on that side, honor and love to Marguerite Vendale. For the people are proud of her to enthusiasm. This greeting of the bride under her new name is affectionately meant as a surprise, and therefore the arrangement has been made that she, unconscious why, shall be taken to the church by a tortuous back way. A scheme not difficult to carry into execution in the crooked little town of Brieg. So, all things are in readiness, and they are to go and come on foot. Assembled in the inn's best chamber, festively adorned, are the bride and bridegroom, the nuptial notary, the London lawyer, Madame Dor, and a certain large mysterious Englishman, popularly known as Monsieur Joe Liddell. And behold Madame Dor, arrayed in a spotless pair of gloves of her own, with no hand in the air, but both hands clasped round the neck of the bride, to embrace whom Madame Dor has turned her broad back on the company, consistent to the last. Forgive me, my beautiful, pleads Madame Dor, for that I ever was his she-cat. She-cat, Madame Dor? Engaged to sit watching my so charming mouse, are the explanatory words of Madame Dor, delivered with a penitential sob. Why, you were our best friend. George, dearest, tell Madame Dor. Was she not our best friend? Undoubtedly, darling. What should we have done without her? You are both so generous, cries Madame Dor, accepting consolation, and immediately relapsing. But I commenced as a she-cat. Ah! But like the cat in the fairy story, good Madame Dor, says Vendale, saluting her cheek, you were a true woman. And, being a true woman, the sympathy of your heart was with true love. I don't wish to deprive Madame Dor of her share in the embraces that are going on, Mr. Bintrey puts in, watch in hand, and I don't presume to offer any objection to your having got yourselves mixed together, in the corner there, like the three graces. I merely remark that I think it's time we were moving. What are your sentiments on that subject, Mr. Ladle? Clear, sir, replies Joey, with a gracious grin. I'm clear altogether, sir, for having lived so many weeks upon the surface. I never was half so long upon the surface afore, and it's done me a power of good. At Cripple Corner, I was too much below it. Atop of the simpleton, I was a deal too high above it. I found the medium here, sir. And if ever I take it in convivial, in all the rest of my days, I mean to do it this day, to the toast of bless 'em both. I too, says Bintrey. And now, Monsieur Voigt, let you and me be two men of Marseille, and Allens, Marchands, arm in arm. They go down to the door, where others are waiting for them, and they go quietly to the church, and the happy marriage takes place. While the ceremony is yet in progress, the notary is called out. When it is finished, he has returned, is standing behind Vendale, and touches him on the shoulder. Go to the side door, one moment, Monsieur Vendale. Alone. Leave Madame to me. At the side door of the church, are the same two men from the hospice. They are snow-stained and travel-worn. They wish him joy, and then each lays his broad hand upon Vendale's breast, and one says in a low voice, while the other steadfastly regards him, "It is here, Monsieur. Your litter. The very same." "My litter is here? Why?" "Hush. For the sake of Madame. Your companion of that day, what of him?" The man looks at his comrade, and his comrade takes him up. Each keeps his hand laid earnestly on Vendale's breast. He had been living at the first refuge, Monsieur, for some days. The weather was now good, now bad. "Yes?" "He arrived at our hospice the day before yesterday, and, having refreshed himself with sleep on the floor before the fire, wrapped in his cloak, was resolute to go on, before dark, to the next hospice. He had a great fear of that part of the way, and thought it would be worse tomorrow." "Yes?" "He went on alone. He had passed the gallery, when an avalanche like that which fell behind you near the bridge of the Ganther, killed him. We dug him out, suffocated and broken all to pieces. But, Monsieur, as to Madame, we have brought him here on the litter, to be buried. We must descend the street outside. Madame must not see. It would be an accursed thing, to bring the litter through the arch across the street, until Madame has passed through. As you descend, we who accompany the litter will set it down on the stones of the street the second to the right, and will stand before it. But do not let Madame turn her head towards the street the second to the right. There is no time to lose. Madame will be alarmed by your absence. Adieu." Vendale returns to his bride, and draws her hand through his unmanied arm. A pretty procession awaits them at the main door of the church. They take their station in it, and descend the street amidst the ringing of the bells, the firing of the guns, the waving of the flags, the playing of the music, the shouts, the smiles, and tears, of the excited town. Heads are uncovered as she passes, hands are kissed to her, all the people bless her. Heaven's benediction on the dear girl. See where she goes in her youth and beauty, she who so nobly saved his life. Near the corner of the street the second to the right, he speaks to her, and calls her attention to the windows on the opposite side. The corner well passed, he says. "Do not look round, my darling, for a reason that I have," and turns his head. Then, looking back along the street, he sees the litter and its bearers passing up alone under the arch, as he and she and their marriage train go down towards the shining valley. End of Project Gutenberg. A text of No Thoroughfare, by Dickens and Collins. Notho by Gutenberg Edition.